It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Because, you know, in all honesty, some of the greatest gifts we can give ourselves is truly to just be ourselves. And I know for me, and probably for you too, when we were younger, being ourselves and trying to figure all this stuff out was pretty confusing. I mean, let's think about some of the things that we came up against. Who was teaching us about the birds and the bees? Who taught us the art of being ourselves? Not really anybody, so to speak. I mean, I know for me, my parents weren't really the ones who were doing a whole lot of conversations about sex and things such as that with me. And most of what I learned about sex and sexuality probably got absorbed through comments made in the locker rooms and things such as that. But through all of that, there's a lot of stuff that really didn't contribute to our best understanding of sex and sexuality. And as I was thinking about that, I thought I'd really like to have a guest come on the show who has taken art form and, you know, kind of talk about sex, sexuality, and, you know, things in the bedroom, in the boudoir, so to speak, and is really reaching out to people to help them embrace their sexuality, embrace their genders, and embrace this beautiful thing that we call sex that many of us share with someone we care about. And sometimes we share it with someone we just want to have a good time with. And so today I'm bringing in a poet. Her name is Ray Monet. And I love her because she's kind of this straight to the point sexual activist. And she really speaks from a perspective of her own sexual awakening, which she kind of found her way into through the positive spotlight of loving herself and her own sexual energy and just doing it her way. And that's why I thought it would be the perfect match to help you, if you're listening to this, to kind of walk that tightrope of life and really begin being your truest sexual self. So welcome to the show, poet Ray Monet.
Thank you so much, Rick. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you because I can't say that I've ever had someone on the show who is doing kind of an artistic thing around sexuality. So this really piqued my interest when we kind of ran across each other via Facebook and through the internet, lovely world of internet networking. And I thought, you know, this could be really, really cool. So I'm really excited to share you with the listeners. So let's dive right in. So tell me a little bit about why you started bringing this whole sexual perspective into your artistic self, into the poems and things that you're writing. What was it that spawned this for you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that you said during your intro is exactly what I experienced. I grew up having nobody to give me the talk. You know, nobody really sat me down and told me about sex. Nobody really sat me down and told me how to protect myself, not just from STDs, but, you know, how to protect my heart. That sex is, like, really connected to that, and it's connected to the way that I'm going to treat relationships for the rest of my life. And it was really absurd to me, you know, becoming an adult and realizing that, you know, parents, you know, we kind of put our children out there to, you know, to learn math and reading and science so that they'll be well-rounded and know how to, you know, live their lives. But then we leave this huge gap where sex is concerned. And we just kind of throw our kids out to the wolves.
Yeah, it's like, okay, go fish, but figure out how to fish without a pole and worms and bait and all that sort of stuff. There's nothing. I mean, yes, okay, let's be honest. There are sexual education classes that we take somewhere along the line. I don't even remember. For me, I think it was in high school, maybe middle school. But even those kind of, they tell you the mechanics, so to speak, of sex, and they help you understand different genders and things like that. And depending on where it is, maybe they don't even go that deep. But one thing I know, and I love what you just said, is nobody taught you how all this connects you at your heart level. Nobody does this. So in your work, and I've read a little bit of your stuff pre-interview, you really are coming from that heart center in the way you approach this. So who's the real targets that you're trying to reach through your beautiful art and work that you're doing right now?
I'm trying to reach anybody that feels they're lost. Mm-hmm. Anyone who feels that, you know, sexually, like, they may have taken a wrong turn, or it feels like, you know, why is everybody judging me? Or why is it that, you know, these relationships just are not panning out for me? Mm-hmm. And really, it's because of the root of your sexual experience, your sexual history. Not saying that, you know, you should be so experienced and that's really going to help you in your relationships, but it will help you better to navigate your relationships if you understand your sexual self and your sexual past.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't make those connections between their past and their present. For example, and really fast example, my grandfather, he was the man in my life. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't know my dad, so my grandfather was the one that I, you know, modeled everything after, mentally speaking. Mm-hmm. So as I grew up, even though I like, you know, the tall, dark, and handsome,
yep.
My grandfather is tall, skinny, and light-skinned, okay? So that's what I found that I kept going after. Like, my first couple of boyfriends, middle school, high school, you know, college, all tall, light-skinned guys.
Interesting.
Because I didn't understand how, you know, growing up in a household, you know, with a tall, light-skinned man would affect that decision for me.
Interesting.
And that's just one small facet.
But, you know, as you were saying that, I don't know how many people really get this blueprinting. And it's, you know, it's talked about, I think in this day and age, it's even starting to be talked about even more. In fact, a good girlfriend of mine, Terry, and now her last name is slipping my mind. It always does when these interviews are going on. It's like, okay, Terry, da 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 da. But she's a therapist in the New Jersey area, and I love her to death. And she did a whole course at a recent event we were at around the blueprinting of our parents and how it impacts who we are. Mm-hmm. In our own relationships. It wasn't about, okay, mom and dad screwed us all up. It's no, the mom and dad mimicked the blueprint that we now play by. They developed the playbook that we bring into our current relationships, which is exactly
right.
What you're saying. This is the stuff that we bring forward. So for you, one example was, you know, the tall, light skinned guys, but I have a feeling from what you've said, there's probably even more that has been brought into your relationship life because of your grandfather and the relationship you had with him. So when you see something showing up in your relationship or your relationships that you've had that you know is coming from that space, how do you take it on and how do you try to walk through that and either change it or accept it? What are some of the things that you do?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I'm so glad that you asked this question. I am in a relationship right now, and I am very, very blessed to have a partner who also understands, you know, their own sexual past and, like, what's going on, like, inside. So when those patterns come up, we kind of take a step back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we take a step back. We say, okay, hold on. Wait, give me 5 minutes to breathe, because that wasn't even my own energy that just invaded this conversation or this argument that we're having. Because that's when it comes up a lot of times in arguments.
Yep.
You know, in my family, the thing to do is you get into an argument and, okay, like in the middle of that argument when things are getting really heated, everybody just walk away from each other and we'll revisit this, you know, when we calm down. Unfortunately, my partner does not like the walking away thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit of a problem. So, you know, what I do is sit there and, you know, we kind of just go through it one piece by one piece, and we just really slow everything down and say, listen, this is how I'm feeling. This is what affected me. This is what my problem is with it. How do you feel about the things that I just said? You know? and we kind of respond back to each other, letting each other know, okay, well, this is what I heard from you, because it's not always going to be the same.
Right.
But this is what I heard from you. This is what I got from what you just said, and this is how I feel about it. And so we try to just like really take it slow and just go through those motions. But it's actually really, really helped, because our arguments used to be hours, days on end. Now it's a good 10 or 15 minutes, and we can kind of tidy that up and go on with the rest of our day.
But in that moment that you are learning to do this, it is so difficult. I've worked extremely. I mean, in my own world, in my own life, I've worked on it, and I still work on it. But especially when I've been working with clients that I may be working with one of them and the other one is not involved, it's really difficult to say, okay, well, here's what I would recommend, or let's practice, let's role model this so you can take it back. Well, that's really great. But if the other person hasn't been prepared to be in the situation in that manner, it's very difficult. It becomes that thing where you need to have some conversations with your other half. You know, it doesn't matter, gay, straight, whatever it is, that, okay, this isn't working for us. We get into these arguments and it goes on and on and on. So let's try something new. So what I do with clients is say, I'm going to model some stuff with you. We're going to do some work together. We're going to role play. However, before you do any of this with your significant other, you need to have a conversation, and it needs to be a quiet conversation about this is what's not working for me and may only be not working for me. And the next time we have something like this crop up, here's how I'd like to make this different. Here's how I'd like to try something different. Are you with me? Can you step into the ring with me in this way? And I think it's really important to have those kind of conversations. So your work is, the pieces that I've seen of it and looked at, is a lot about starting to really own your own birds and bees and boudoir talk yourself so that you can be better at it with the person you're with, correct?
That's absolutely right. You know, you definitely have to take that look inside of you first. You know, you can't come out here. I mean, we always hear that saying that, you know, you need to be whole before you can find your other half.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be a complete person. You need to have that knowledge of self, that security of self, to be able to handle a relationship. Because relationships are extremely hard work. I mean, they take so much. You have this 8-hour job, and you go, and you get paid, and that's awesome. And then you come home to this other 8-hour job that doesn't, you know, pay in money, but it's still awesome.
Yeah.
And you still have to work at it. And one of those things that you have to do is be secure in yourself, because as soon as you get in a relationship, all of those insecurities that you had, all of those creeping little thoughts that you may have had when you were single, they like triple and they come out of the woodwork.
Yep.
So you really got to be mindful of what holes are in your own boat, you know, and try to plug those up and get those taken care of before you set sail on your journey.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, just from your perspective, and it sounds like you've had some experience in this, and that, you know, some of the stuff you write about shows it too, but why do you think it is we as humans really rush forward before we have come to this, as close as we can to this place of wholeness, to try to dive into these relationships? Why do you think we're just ready to go no matter what, even though we haven't even learned how to be with ourselves?
Because it's lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, you know, everyone has that, you know, that loneliness inside, that, you know, that kind of just, man, I wish somebody was here to experience this with me. And you look around, and in the media, you see it everywhere. You know, some couples hanging out together, they're kissing at the park, or they're holding hands at the mall, and that's all that you want, because that's all that's being put in front of you. That's all that you see. What we don't show necessarily in our media is happy singles. Just being happy to be themselves, not necessarily looking for anybody, just out here enjoying their lives, and that's what the focus is going to be. Often we see the single person who is so work-focused that they just don't have time for a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, kind of shake our fingers at that and say, no, bad single person, you need to be in a relationship. You need to be out there looking for somebody. But what we as singles need to do is stop trying to live our lives by other people's dictations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
nobody can tell you what your timeline is. You know, you decide when you are ready to do the things that you need to do.
Yeah.
Nobody else can do that for you, and nobody else is going to be there to do the maintenance on your relationship at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I think to this point of doing the relationship maintenance at 2 o'clock in the morning, nobody's going to be there at 2 o'clock in the morning when you need to do the maintenance on yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that if you haven't come to that space where you are able to pull yourself through this without, and I'm probably going to irritate some people when I say this, but that's okay. If you can't pull yourself through it without somebody else's help, I hate to say it, but you're setting yourself up to be in a codependent relationship.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, many people don't see that piece, that there's a beautiful balance between, I want to be dependent on my relationship, but I also want to be independent of my relationship. And I think a lot of people give lip service to that, but then they don't allow themselves to be independent. And I see this happen over and over and over again in relationships, especially in the work that I do with people that are just starting to come out of the closet. It's immediately, and I'm going to put this in the framework so that I'm not generalizing everyone. Mm-hmm. What I find is those who are coming out of the closet who have just come out of a long-term marriage or have children, the only thing they know is the secure relationship. So immediately their diving spot to dive back in is right into a relationship. And I really try my best to encourage them to take some time and be with themselves, because the self they think they know is so much different than this new self that just walked out of the closet. You've
Definitely.
Been hiding yourself. You've been pretending to be someone else. And so, you know, just like in any good relationship, if the relationship comes to an end, one of the things that most people don't realize is you need to work to unravel the relationship. Yes, a lot of times we just want to slam the door and say, screw you, I'm out of here, and we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some unraveling that has to occur. Even if you don't want to speak to that person again, there's some unraveling that has to occur. Well, simultaneously, for those who've been in a long-term relationship, hiding themselves, the last thing you really should want to do, and for some it will work, I'm not saying this for everybody, but for some, you may get lucky and it'll work. For others, you need to unravel the you thought you were and reconstruct the you've always been. And I know that sounds weird to say the you've always been. Well, who you've been has always been hiding underneath everything. Now you're unraveling is the person that you thought you were supposed to be, the pretending person you thought you were supposed to be. So
you've been in a cocoon for all of these years. Yeah. Now it's time for you to be a butterfly.
I love that. I love that cocoon to the butterfly metaphor. So if someone is really struggling to become that butterfly, and I know you do a lot of writing about this sort of stuff, but what would be something you would say about how do you step into that fullness of yourself and start to be, you know, that sexual being, that person who's really secure? What would you suggest to someone?
I know this is going to sound terrible, but you have to stop caring. You have to stop caring. I know that sounds like maybe the harshest advice that anyone could ever give.
Well, let's qualify that. I kind of think I know where you're going, but you have to stop caring about what?
You have to stop caring about what people are going to think.
Yeah.
And, you know, how people are going to react to finding out this information, or if people are going to treat you differently. Let that come as it may.
Mm-hmm.
Because, frankly, a part of that is just life.
Yeah.
When you go to a new job, you don't know how your new coworkers are going to receive you. You don't know, you know, what they know about your background coming into the place. And 9 times out of 10, it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So let your spirit, let your beauty, let your just inner security, your inner guidance, your inner light speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to, you know, just walk up to people everywhere and say, oh, hello, how are you? I'm John, I'm gay. Right. People don't need to know that. That's your bedroom business. Mm-hmm. However, if you do like, if you would like to reveal that you have a partner, say it with pride.
Yeah.
Don't say it like, I'm so afraid of what you're going to think, because just that small tone in your voice, like, this is my partner, Jim. No,
Yeah. That
sounds like you don't really want to introduce us to Jim anyway. Sounds like you're not sure. So
Sure. Now
I'm not sure is the person receiving that message from you.
Absolutely. And this is, I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is one of the things that I do bring up with clients all the time as we're working through the coming out process, is until you fully own who you are and you love yourself, then you leave the doorway open for everyone else to not accept you as who you are. There's no getting around it. You can't do it. The minute somebody quaver in front of somebody and you're kind of standing on the shifting sand, then people have that, you know, instant in to go, oh, they're not really secure in themselves, so maybe they're still trying to figure out if they're really gay or they're not, or they're lesbian or they're bi or whatever it is, you know.
It's
just crazy.
It's just like Facebook.
Uh-huh.
It's just like Facebook. You know, people will put up, you know, a status, let's say,
mm-hmm.
that says, you know, I'm so angry at my partner, you know, I'm pissed off because of this, this, and that. And they put all of their business out for public consumption. But then they get upset or offended when someone else comments on their open status, open comment box,
right,
for you to say whatever you want. And people get upset when someone expresses an opinion that they don't like. But who put that information out there to be judged?
Yep.
Who put that gap, you know, in the relationship? Who gave that space for someone to be able to step in and criticize and do all of this stuff?
And I think an important point to make here, and I think I've said this on previous podcasts in different ways, but your sexuality and your sexual energy, whatever that looks like, and how you like to be in your sexual self, isn't anybody's business unless you want it to be their business. So
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends who have said, oh, I'm not really out at work. And I've been on different panels with people and talked about this, and people kind of get really upset. Like, you're not really gay. You're not holding the flag. You're not being the person you need to be because you're not out at work. Hey, if they don't want to be out at work, they don't want to be out of work. I mean, I don't see a whole lot of heterosexual, you know, swingers that are walking into work saying, hi, I'm Jane and I'm a swinger. Hello.
Exactly.
You know, I think this thing about everybody wanting to be in everybody's birds and bees and boudoir, it's time for it to stop. What I choose to do and how I choose to live is my right as a human being. And I think what people often miss is, they're trying to make it their right because there's something about how I'm living that is making them insecure in how they're living. Now, I'm not saying hide your stuff, and I don't advocate that, but mm-hmm. find a way to share how it makes you comfortable. And it's one of the principles that I stand on, I stand so solidly on this one with clients, is there is no way to come out and be gay other than your way to come out and be gay. There's no handbook on doing this. And I think it's really important for people to own that sort of stuff and say, okay, I'm doing this my way, which kind of brings me back to you. You've found a way to talk about sex, sexuality, birds, bees, the boudoir stuff, and be you. So why is this so important for you to be sharing yourself in this way in the world?
You know, growing up, I was a rape victim. I had been molested, you know, just like on several different occasions. Like, it wasn't even cool. Like, looking back at it, like, just wow. One of those things was that, you know, like I said, nobody was telling me anything about sex, so I didn't have a clue that there was a problem. I didn't have a clue that there was a problem. And until they get you, you know, in fifth grade or eighth grade or seventh grade, and they finally tell you, oh, well, if an adult is doing this, it's wrong.
Right.
And even if another kid is doing this to you, it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, by then it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
It was too late.
This is kind of
an
interesting thing.
And all of that damage had been done.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing that you're bringing up. And again, I'm a parent, so I've made choices on how I do this with my own children.
Mm-hmm.
But I often wonder if the whole, quote, birds and the bees talk and how to not get your heart broken and all this sort of stuff, if we're waiting till it's almost too late because things are already happening for kids. I mean, in this day and age, and especially with, you know, everything being available in the palm of your hand, I think we need to increase the amount of information, the right information that's getting into kids' hands these days. Because by the time they get to second or third grade, there's lots of stuff that they probably already encountered that maturity-wise, they don't know what to do with. Yet, the only way they got it, and it's similar to like what I said in the intro, it's kind of like, okay, the locker room talks is about all you ever got, but now they don't even have to go to the locker room. It's right there in the palm of their hands.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And now we have a generation growing up where this information's in their hands, guiding them. But where are we in this picture as adults to ensure that they get a perspective that, yes, that's probably right what you've heard. That's probably right. Oh, well, this isn't quite exactly. I think we still owe it to our younger generations to have real conversations. And I think that's kind of where your work comes into play at this point, is finding a medium where you can reach people from all different ages, but show it in a way that really improves humanity versus hurts humanity.
Oh, definitely. I'm a huge, huge advocate. And I'm actually working on developing a curriculum now for, I'm an advocate for progressive sexual education. And that to me means every single year.
Yeah.
Every year that you're in school, you need to learn a little bit more about your body and a little bit more about what it does and a little bit more about how it's going to affect you. I mean, one of the reasons why we even have teenagers running around so upset is because nobody's told them anything.
Exactly.
They're feeling all of these feelings and emotions, and they're like, oh, my God, my body's changing, my voice changing. I don't know what to feel. And people just tell you, oh, well, yeah, it's just a period of adjustment. Yeah, you'll be confused for a while. It's cool. Everybody goes through it.
Right.
Just like it's some badge of honor. But what we're doing is we're doing a disservice to our kids. We're doing a disservice to our own futures. Because what happens when you, when you have sex, you end up with babies.
Right.
Babies contribute to overpopulation. Overpopulation contributes to how the economy is doing.
Yeah.
It contributes to you being able or not able to find a job.
Absolutely. And I think these
And people
pieces...
don't think about all of that down the road stuff.
Right. Exactly. I met a young man just recently who... his brother's 24 and is already, and I'm not criticizing, I'm just making an observation. His brother's 24 and they already have their third child, which is great. If that's what they want, more power to you. I know when I hear things like that, and I, as an adult who's in his 50s, so please take it in the context that I'm saying this. I can't imagine at 24 having three children. I would have felt like my life, there is no life. I am now raising children for the better duration of my life. And I love my kids. Don't get me wrong. I love my daughters with all my heart. But I think what you just brought up is, let's have some of the real conversations. Let's start really talking about what these consequences are. It's not just what's going to happen to your life. There's going to be things that show up because of those kind of decisions that got made just to get our rocks off, so to speak, without having the right protection and all this sort of stuff that, I don't know, I just don't know if we're having the real conversations we need to have in this day and age.
Oh, I agree. And actually, if you don't mind, Rick, I'd like to do a quick piece for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
To bring us a little bit full circle here.
Yep.
This poem is called Whore.
Mm.
I'm not sure if this is one of the ones you may have seen, but I... like, apparently everybody just loves this poem. And I think the reason why is because it speaks to everyone on different levels.
Got it.
But
awesome.
Let's just take a quick look at this. It's called Whore. I'm pretty sure I'm a whore because All I heard was a knock on the door, two quiet taps in rapid succession just after the text message announcing that he was present. So I opened for him. And like the many men before, I dressed according to his needs, pampered his ego, letting him mold me into the woman that he wished I could be. But just temporarily. Because in a few days, no fuck it, a few minutes from now, another man will come around changing me from your vision of a brown-skinned Betty Crocker into his slave, the cum slut. Treating me only as I agreed to be, and with every new guy, there's some non-disclosure contingency, i.e., if this gets out, it's over. So I just keep my feet back stretched across satin sheets, making certain that he feels like a king before I kneel to his throne. And praise him, I did with my lips and tongue. My whole mouth went numb before he decided to come. Over. Again. Using me each time as if I were a washcloth, he would wipe his balls off, then hang me up to dry. But then return to his wife with lips drenched in my sensuous liquid love potion number 9. By my side, he reclines for 2 minutes to let his heart rest. Gets dressed and with a kiss promises to see me for dinner, which turned into a movie where he screwed me in the front row. You know, we paid $20 so we could fucking popcorn on the floor. We could have did that at home. But I guess it's to appease me, because I need him to at least act like I have some dignity in order to keep my sanity. Because I can't escape these stares and whispers, words never spoken by hoes pissed because their income's lowering, but why buy it when it's free? Okay, look, I don't just give it away. There's only a special few to whom I give the privilege of being with me. But they come and go as they please, giving me little rest between one and the next. My addiction to sex has put my spirit to the test, keeping my mind in the constant state of unrest. But still, I lay here now, his pants down, wrapped around his ankles. Strong thighs help push him deeper inside where he massages the pride that I swallowed earlier in the front seat. Turning our clandestine meat to a public seat while drops of sweat and curling toes paint tapestries on the back window. And I manufacture moans and way more than that. Making certain that he feels like a Mac while he empties his sack into me, filling the void only for a moment, but never an eternity. And then he returned to me, looking for that boost that he so desperately needs. And I service him willingly, trading my cunt for companionship because he's my friend, right? That's the lie I try to justify on sleepless nights where cracked windows blow a breeze that stimulates me, giving the rise to the need to call and see who's free, but that's nobody. I tend to forget that I work on their schedule. So when that call comes in at 2 a.m., I'm like a nurse prepping for surgery. A delicate procedure fabricating this fantasy for a man who doesn't even love me, nor I him. But we tend to fill a space, a private place within each other, where the pain goes and the hurt grows, metastasizing upon our melancholy, turning our dark dreams into this vicious reality, where he continues to demean me, letting drops fall ever so meaninglessly upon my skin. And I'm taking it all in. I'm taking it all into myself again. And I'm pretty sure that makes me a whore. Yeah, I'm sure. Mm. So that's whore.
I love it. Very well done. Very well done. And that does really bring us full circle. So this is the Coming Out Lounge, as you know, Monet. And I'm kind of like taken aback by what I just experience. I love it.
I know. It's a lot to digest.
Well, it's a lot to digest, but, you know, Ray, I just think it talks to the realness of what goes on in our society without really saying what we're meant to say. So This is the Coming Out Lounge. And one of the things that I always ask each guest is, you know, there's a lot of people that listen to this who are working towards being more authentic, stepping into themselves. Is there anything you could contribute to give them as a piece of encouragement or a piece of advice for really standing in their truth and being their sexual self?
Absolutely. You are freaking awesome. Mm. Okay? It doesn't matter who hears this. It doesn't matter who listening, who receives it. Because guess what? Each of us, every person on this earth was created to be some kind of awesome. And if you love yourself first, not only will that awesomeness speak volumes for you before you ever get to meet the next soul, not only will that awesomeness speak volumes for you, but that awesomeness will translate itself into love. And not just love for you and for yourself, but love for everyone around you. And that kind of love is truly infectious and contagious. And that's the kind of thing that you want to catch.
Awesome. Totally awesome. I'm so glad that's where we ended this on. So if somebody wants to follow you, what's a good way for them to follow you? What's your website?
Oh, absolutely. If you guys are looking for me anywhere on the internet, you can find me under the name at Poet Ray Monet. That's PoetraeMonet. So you can find me Twitter, Facebook, everything,
awesome.
Even the obscure social media websites I'm on. And as well, if I can just squeeze it in, if you guys would like to pick up my book, The Birds, the Bees, and the Boudoir. It is available on Amazon as well as Kindle. So definitely, it's very reasonably priced.
Awesome. That's awesome. I'm so glad you were here today. I really appreciate you being with me. And just, I love sharing you with the world today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for the invite, Rick. I really enjoyed my time.
Absolutely. And if you've enjoyed what we've shared today, you know, some of the stuff that may have woke you up, got you thinking, and you think, wow, there's other people who really should be hearing this, feel free to share this podcast. And also, you know, step into iTunes or Stitcher, SoundCloud. And, you know, if you really like this stuff, we love a little love. So give us a rating and review if that works for you. You can also find me, The Coming Out Coach, on Facebook. Just look for The Coming Out Coach. And, of course, my Twitter handle is at Rick Clemens, and the hashtag for the show is #ComingOutLounge. And before we wrap up today, I did want to tell you that my book will be coming out in February 2016. It's called Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay, A Late Bloomer's Guide to Coming Out. Really excited about that. So if you're interested in getting on the advanced list of notifications for that, just go to my website, rickclemens.com, and that's Clemens, C-L-E-M-O-N-S, not E-N-S, O-N-S.com. And with that, it's that time we're going to wrap up everything here, and I just want you to go out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your powerful truth. Have a good week, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
You've just experienced The Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.